DIY Central with Dan and Johnny.
Hello and welcome to episode 18 of DIY Central in association with FutureTicketing.ie, and it is a show in which we rather wonder what might have been as Shamrock Rovers bow out of the Champions League and could be joined by three other League of Ireland teams come Thursday evening in the Conference League. With that in mind, we talked to Andy Lyons and James Talbot ahead of Bowes Stjarnan in the Aviva Stadium Thursday, and also Liam Buckley is going to talk about Sligo Rovers' bid to overcome a 1-0 deficit against F. Howe at the Showgrounds. Gerard Bryan is our main guest on the show today. We're going to talk about St. Pat's great start to the season, obviously their win over Derry, but mainly about their academy and the addition of all these young players on pro contracts. We're going to be giving away a 4-star pizza. Congratulations to Wicklow native Tom Byrne on last week's win. And there's also the FAI Cup draw. Somehow Shamrock Rovers, their bad week got even worse when they were drawn against Galway United, obviously in Tala. High-flying Galway United, 5 wins on the bounce, Dan. Which may or may not continue into next weekend. But let's get talking Shamrock Rovers first, I guess.
Yeah, that's a frustrating one, John. Like, I was only...
Moral victory, as you said in your report.
Yeah, I bloody hate these moral victories, you know. They're really annoying. And look, you think about it, we spoke about a bit about this off-air and stuff. Like, there's obviously a couple of elements to this result. Like, you know, they're probably not the best team Rovers have played in Europe in recent years, but I still think Rovers produced their best performance of the season. And I think in some respects they left themselves with that two goal uphill mountain last week, you know, and fairly so. I think last week was a 2-0 game, and I think last night the fairest conclusion would have been if the game had gone to extra time. I think that would have been fair enough.
Well, that's very, very biased now.
Well, no, I think in terms of how Bratislava approach things in the second half, I think they were sort of flagging a small bit.
Yeah, I agree.
I have no reason to be biased on it. I just think Rovers had earned the chance to bring it to the distance. And who
But
knows?
You're talking more about like kind of, that's more philosophical than like what happened in the game, we'll say.
Well, okay, but I don't think in the game, like, you know, so Rovers had to be a bit braver playing against a team that's going to press you a bit more, right, as they do. And their strength, Bratislava, is their front four players. And they're quite a positive side in terms of how they play. So if you're playing against players that could press you at a higher intensity than players you play against week to week, you will sometimes risk getting caught. And a lot of the nervy moments for Shamrock Rovers were self-inflicted ones, as opposed to like amazing Bratislava moments of quality. So like Lopez early on scuffed across. They ran half the pitch and could have scored. There was one before halftime where a pass was nearly intercepted. But if we talk about maybe last week, I thought Rovers were very safe in how they played. You know, they didn't, I don't know, there was a lack of conviction probably in how they played. I thought their passing was a lot better last night. Andrew in next to Gary O'Neill was a lot better. Gary O'Neill himself picked out some really good positive passes, you know, going forward. And yes, you are going to take chances. But Dundalk against Bate in 2016, they won 3-0. But like the fans were on their nerves several times in that game. And there's no Irish side good enough in Europe to play against teams at that level and not give up moments and chances. You know, that's just a fact. And like a lot of the great results we've had over the years have had some absolutely hair-raising escapes, you know. And you can pick any big League of Ireland win in Europe and you will actually struggle to not be able to point to like one or two instances like there was in the game last night.
It's so, the level you're at and you need things to go your way.
Yeah, you do. And what I'm saying is, like Vladimir Voice spoke after and he didn't really have any complaints about Rovers being better on the night. Like he wasn't sort of, you know, as in the manager of Vladimir Voice as opposed to he had no complaints. And I honestly think extra time, they would have probably, you know, felt like they'd earned it. I think reasonably.
Yeah.
Because they got the 2-0 ahead. And they conceded, they were always going to be vulnerable in the period after the goal, or Slovan stepped it up a bit, as they did. But they were sort of making a few subs and, you know, they got lucky with the you know, Lopez was fouled and they got away with it. Now, listen, they've had luck recent weeks go their way, the high-profile Dundalk penalties. So they're not going to get sympathy from other clubs around the league. And to be honest, the ref was a bit...
But he was all over the shop. I mean, should have sent off Gary O'Neill. I think that is a second yellow, being honest. I think Gary O'Neill will probably reflect that he was fortunate. So you have that. But, you know, that Lopez tackle, as much as there wasn't an awful lot in it, 99 out of 100 referees give a free out for that.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, Rovers sort of stopped a bit. And listen, obviously you shouldn't do that. And there was still a fair few seconds between the foul and the ball going into the net, you know? So it's not like you can't do a propaganda job on it. Like, you know, they could have still dealt with it better. But I think just when you're playing a team like that in preseason, as they are effectively, although listen, they would have had a pretty high end training camp, I'm sure, and so on. I just felt it was weighted towards Rovers if they could, particularly that they had a bit of a stronger squad this week, so they were able to bring on some decent clubs off the bench. I just felt it was there for them. Like, the hard part was done. You know, they'd done the hard part, which is clawing back the 2-goal deficit. So it's frustrating. But I really think, like, they hit a level, you know, across that game, you know, at times in passages that they haven't hit at all domestically. And it's interesting to see if this inspires them to better things or just rising to the occasion of the one game. You know?
As well as that, like, I know it's different levels, but clubs will look at how shaky they were playing out from the back at times and say, we need to press Rovers very high. And now maybe Rovers are going to play like different systems against League of Ireland teams. But ultimately, Bratislava, you know, it was so hot over there. I think Bradley did not pick the team he would have wanted. You see Joey O'Brien, the difference he makes coming back. And Richie Towell, in fairness, who I thought, like, you know, I know you were saying he definitely is going to start these games. I just bringing him into Bratislava, considering his lack of experience with this team, to me wasn't ideal, but the quality of that strike. And it was just like everything was kind of, all the stars were aligning. And it was just, for me, Dan, it was really disappointing because I love League of Ireland teams doing well in Europe. This was a really good performance. I had you know, you have people having to pay €10 to watch it. It wasn't on national TV, and now everyone's in the Conference League, and it's just a bit of a damn squib, to be honest, because there was a lot of quality in that Rovers performance as well, even though I think they can play better as well.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I know you think they can play better, and I understand where you're coming from on that. We had
I don't think Gaffney works in Europe at that level. I don't think Gaffney can hold up the ball as well as an in-form Aaron Green can. But now, whether Aaron Green is in the form that he has been is another debate.
There are two different options. I think Gaffney's a better ball player, and I think if you're playing with a side that doesn't have a huge amount of pace, and you're actually going to try and link the play with Burke and Mandrew as you would, Gaffney's actually better. And you can actually see how that worked for the goal last night.
Yeah, he's very good.
So I think picking Gaffney was completely the right call personally. But, you know, I think...
Where's the pace in the Rovers team though, Dan? I know Farouche is injured, but where is the pace
But we spoke about it last week. I think would have been very interesting. Like, when it got to 2-0, so Bratislava, listen, they were quite positive, but they actually did try and squeeze Rovers a bit after half-time. And you saw them manage it. And in Rovers, that's where Rovers were at their most impressive, that they broke out with that and they got the goal. And I think then Bratislava were going to start to take a few more chances and take a few more. And that's when Green, like, it was the perfect tie situation where you bring Green on then, when all of a sudden you're playing against a team in pre-season. They're like, oh, geez, here's a guy now. They're clipping it up and he's trying to stretch us. So I really think that it was the right call. I do think that was the right call. But obviously they conceded so soon after getting level that they didn't get to fully test that theory. And
they also brought off Gary O'Neill, which was completely understandable, but replaced him because McCann is injured with Dylan Watts, who is obviously a completely different player. So their midfield didn't have anywhere near the shape he would want at that situation.
Yeah, no, listen, there's a few aspects to it, but...
Liam Scales is an outstanding footballer as well.
Scales, he's getting way. Better. I mean, he's getting better and better.
Can you imagine him left side of the three with Farouja on his left in a wing-back situation? I mean, there'd be so much quality down that left with Scales kind of centre-back, but also with a role to attack. I just think he's...
You say that, but like, I'm such a big fan of Scales, but actually, like, he's actually got very good on that wing-back side. Maybe if he was playing the left of the back three, he would actually been pegged back for a good part of that game. You know, like, you're talking, like, you can't imagine that Scales on the left of the back three would have had the freedom to get involved in the players.
No, but Farouja, if they had him, and this is one of the aspects seasons that's been disappointing, he was bought for games like this where his pace is proper quality. Even against Milan last year, I thought he quit himself really well.
Yeah, but we're going on a complete tangent here, but is Liam Farouja, that's a hybrid of the two, is Neil Farouja a wing back? Possibly not. Possibly at his best, actually, as a left winger, and that was an issue with his time at Rovers prior to the injury. So you can't rewrite history on that, to be fair.
Some outstanding forms is from Rovers.
No, there was, like, you know, and I just, but I have to say as well, this is where we're in this, I hate this moral victory crap. Like, do you know what I mean? And like, I understand that you have to praise them and what they've done, but it feels like we've, you know, I said it to someone last night, I feel like I've seen this game before.
Yeah.
You know, this game before was like, well done, lads, and off you go. Now, the good thing now is that, you know, a couple of years back, Dundalk gave it a real go against Rosenborg in that round. They were out of Europe. Same against Bantry Borisov 2 years previously. This Rovers team does now get the chance to go to the Conference League, to the Champions route. They have to buy to the third round, which is, so they're going to be waiting to see. Like, they could potentially end up playing against teams who won last night. They got knocked out in the next stage, although there's a Europa League element that comes in for teams that got through last night too. So actually, it's a bit convoluted, but basically, to explain to people who aren't aware, they can still only play domestic champions who've been knocked out of the Champions League, where that. And they find out on Monday, you know, which tie they're going to be matched up with. So I just hope that they can generate some momentum from it, because, like, it is, the Champions route is funny. They could still end up playing a very good side in that third round. And part of me thinks, listen, the bio is brilliant because they go through. And that's great. But would you like to see them build a bit more momentum by playing a second round tie and just sort of, you know, building on it and going forward and getting some momentum going? So, because we're big advocates of the league and stuff, but the fact is, the biggest round in Europe every year is that first Champions League tie. And only three teams have gone through that round in the last decade, which was Shamrock Rovers in 2011 against Flora Tallinn. I think they won that by one goal. It's Dundalk against FH in 2016, away goals, you know, and we know we were over there. They were hanging on the last few minutes, albeit they possibly should have been out of sight by then, but still, it was away goals. That rule would have gone to extra time in today's rules. And 2019, Dundalk and Riga, which again went to penalties and you know, went all the way. And, like, our clubs haven't mastered getting through that round. Now, generally, our clubs are unseeded, so they need to produce something. And I think, you know, where the regret comes from for Rovers is that while Bratislava are a good side, we've had some difficult nights in Europe in recent years, but they are a good side. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did okay against Young Boys.
They had more vulnerabilities than some of the other teams they played.
Exactly. Like if Rovers win the league this year, or whoever wins the league this year, they could end up getting a harder tie next year. So, like, it's there's some mad results in Europe last night. Like, Lincoln Red Imps of Gibraltar won 5-0 last night against, God, who did they beat? It was actually the Luxembourg champions, which is an interesting one for Bose. If Bose get through, you know, and they play Doodlelands, like, what's happened to football? I saw an Estonian team, we might reference this with Jared Bryan, an Estonian team winning 3-0 away last night. And Shamrock Rovers beat Flora Tallinn like 10 years ago. You know, you're seeing teams in other countries very comfortably getting through that round. Yet we always find it so hard to get through that round, you know? So that is still a mental block round. And yes, sometimes the regionalisation has been a bit of bad luck with the draws. But we to really talk about progress, we need to get better, you know, and we need to be better at that stage. Now, listen, at times we've lauded Linfield last year and stuff, and like they were lost both legs to a team from Lithuania, you know, which wasn't great. So it's all like last year we didn't know about Sheriff. Sheriff won 5-0 their two-legged tie. The Slovenian champions who replaced Celje, they won 5-0 last night too. So leagues are constantly improving, and we need to move with it. And we're going to have an interesting chat with Gerard Bryan actually now, you know, where we touch on, listen, what we need to get the foundations right first, and then hopefully that leads to, like, European success rather than expecting it the other way around. But there is definitely a lingering sense of frustration about that tie that possibly it's one they could have won. But they would have needed a lot of things to go right to win it.
And the sad thing is, a lot of you won't have been watching it because you're not a Shamrock Rovers fan. You didn't pay the €10 or whatever, and it wasn't on live TV. The one Champions League game in Ireland this season was not on live TV, which is very, very disappointing. And that's why we miss Air Sports so much as well. It's, I don't know, in these days of, you know, life changing at such a rapid pace, I'm sure all of you are very encouraged that Dan's eccentric pronunciation of Lithuania has not changed. And kudos to Dundalk as well for getting through, obviously.
What's my eccentric pronunciation of Lithuania?
You've just answered your question there. Let's get to Gerard Bryan.
All right, lads, how's things?
It feels far too long. I remember every week, I think, was the first time we did this podcast years ago. And when it had another name, obviously, every week was like, oh, I think he was the best one so far. I think he was the best one so far. But I remember thinking you were great altogether. I haven't talked to you in a while, though. What's the crack?
Yeah, all good. Keeping busy. Love listening to you guys now on a weekly basis.
Well, Dan is having a pop at me, as if I'm some weirdo for mentioning these four teenagers.
No,
like, it's four young players who signed pro contracts, but also the boy Glory, who went to France to Stade Rien. So it's all happening at Pats. And also, Dan, I want to point out that I did reference Sligo Rovers, obviously, with all the academy players. I will talk to Andy Lyons about Bowes bringing players through. So, and I've spoken about Galway United and all these young players as well. So I just love young footballers, obviously.
Well, I mean, it's good to know you've moved on from young managers to young footballers. Your obsession was previously all the young managers in the league. We've moved on to the young players. But no, it is, listen, it's an interesting story, as you mentioned, that the St. Pat's announced last week to sign four young players in professional terms. Now, Gerard, like, there's obviously... Like, it's changing times in Irish football, and I think it wouldn't be a massive sort of leap to draw some link between the Brexit changes and what's happening here in some shape or form, particularly maybe one or two of the players you're talking about here, who maybe at other times might have been looking to the UK. So maybe tell us a bit about what's going on, because I know there's other clubs as well that are signing players in pro terms around that age group. I mean, Cork City with Cottle Heffernan there recently. And I know sort of Rovers and Bowes have done a bit of it. So what's going on at Pats?
Yeah, so I think what would have happened, lads, is that we would have foreseen this in clubs coming down the line over the last number of seasons. And what typically would have happened was our so-called higher performing players down through the years would have been gone at 16 to the UK. So when they go over to the UK, they're going into wonderful facilities, you know, in multi-million pound academies, loads of pitches, loads of coaches, loads of support, loads of help for them. And they're given a wonderful opportunity to have a platform to go on and become professional footballers. In Ireland, we don't have them structures. So I suppose we would have had to do a lot of internal discussions about what potential is going to come down the road in this country and how we can kind of be best, I suppose, so how we can kind of give the best support to these young players, that if they don't go away at 16, what can we do to make sure that we're giving them the best platform here in this country?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's like there was an announcement last week that sort of, you know, Glory and Zynga has gone to Stade de Reims in France. And we have a situation where I know there's like Kevin Zeffi potentially going to Italy maybe later in the year. We'll see. Like, that's obviously not happened as quickly as maybe people imagined. And there is European interest in players, but is this just a reflection of the need as well? Like, Will Clark presented some figures recently about, say, average training times for, like, you know, under 17s compared to their UK equivalents and stuff like that. Is it a reality that if our players aren't going away at 16 like they would, we have to try and get as many of them into, like, first team, full team setups, because they might necessarily get that full time training, but they're not going to get it with their under 17 side. Like, they actually have to be in or around the first team setup to get those days on the pitch.
Yeah, I think you're bang on there, Dan. I think we owe it to these kids, because it's not their fault that they've been given, you know, that they've been put in this situation. As I said already, like, you could have imagined if this had came in 5 years ago, look at the amount of boys that wouldn't have went to the UK at 16. No, Aaron Connolly wouldn't have went. Adam Oida wouldn't have went. Troy Parrott wouldn't have went. Gavin Bazuna wouldn't have went. All these players would still be based here in our domestic academies. And the thing about it is, we haven't, we haven't got ourselves to a stage yet where we can provide professional environments to them. Like, I'm on about school and I'm on about education. I'm on about, you know, support staff in the academies. I'm on about the top coaches, the facilities, everything that needs to come with the young players all over the rest of Europe get. We just don't have that yet. And I think I would have went on record a while ago saying, we need government support on this. We know that the league has starved, and it's been an age-old conversation that we would have had in terms of, you know, funding, but we have to get ourselves into a situation where we can run proper full-time academies here in this country, where our best young players are not being farmed out at 16, that we're not trying to sell them at 16, that they're not, you know, being shoved in for pittance, you know, and then it doesn't even get reinvested back in more often than not. It probably just goes into that big black hole and writes off a little bit of debt at the end of the year. Look, we have to kind of think, we have to be smart about it, and we have to understand that football nowadays is a business. And until we as a country really understand that our league is not a business yet and it needs to be turned into a business model, we need to bring in proper sponsorship. We need to get TV deals. We need to get government funding. We need to get better facilities, more full-time staff, better support staff around the players. All that has to come hand in hand. And you're right, the only way those best young 16-year-olds now that we can give them a platform is to put them around more experienced players. And take us, for example, we've got the likes of Adam Murphy, James Abankwa, people like that who've signed contracts in the last couple of weeks. They're in with the likes of Robbie Benson. They're in with John Mountain. They're in with Ian Birmingham. They're in with Lee Desmond every single day, because we have to put them in that environment where not only are they getting developed as footballers, but we need to develop them as people as well, that when they do go over into senior environments, or when they do step up to senior environments, that they understand what it's about and how to act and how to behave and get all the good habits that a footballer needs to have. And unfortunately, the higher performing players don't get that at their own age groups in this country.
I think there's a couple of aspects to that, you know, because I suppose I'm trying to flip it around to the other side of the argument. And like, listen, there's always elitism within football, whether we like it or not. There's always a hierarchy of some degree. But I guess I'm thinking of like, so we have a certain select number of sort of like Adam Murphy, as I said, of 16, who's now who's been given this pro contract. But look, what are the options like for the later developing 16-year-olds now, or maybe the 16-year-olds who wouldn't be ready for that first team environment, but they might be ready for it in 18 months' time. But naturally, they will look at maybe other people in their age group making that jump and being given those contracts. And I know that's always been, listen, before it was the lads who were left at home while the lads went to England. So it's unusual to have it within the country here. You know, like it's flipping everything we know in some respects. So is there a balancing act with that? Like, what about the rest of the lads in the Pats under 17s, for example, at the moment? Like, where are their morale levels at when they can see that there's other lads who've sort of gone a grade up, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, listen, you're 100% right. Again, Dan, these are issues that would never have come in the last couple of seasons, because as you pointed out, that our players would have went across and it would have been a case, oh, he's gone away, why can't I go away? But okay, I'm still here and I'm still playing at my own age group. But, you know, we will have that, and that's just nature. You know, that's coming from parents, that's coming from kids who feel that they need to get the opportunity that the other kid has got. So we need to manage expectations, and we need to try and explain and create a proper culture and structure in the academy to say, listen, you're heading in the right way, this is what's happening, you're moving forward, whatever that might be. But it's not just me. I've spoken to other heads of academy over the last couple of weeks as well. They're all in the same boat. It's very understandable for kids and parents to get frustrated when they see it. And that's just human nature. Even if we feel that they're not ready to make that step up, that's just human nature. That I'm not going to use the word jealousy, but it's almost like they feel the need and the want to try and be tested at the same level that the other kid, or given the same opportunity that the other kid is being given. So we need to manage that expectation as best as we possibly can. The other side of it is, Dan, and I'm going to speak quite frankly on this, that our better and our higher performing players, and you know, you look at Rovers with Kevin Zeffie, and you look at other clubs up and down the country, because it's not just Rovers or Pats. You know, as Johnny said at the start, you've got fantastic talent coming through Cork, you've got unbelievable players coming through Sligo, really good players coming through Derry, Finn Hart. It's all up and down the country. We need to make sure that we protect our assets, and if we can bring in from a schoolboy club, or if we can bring in someone at 12 and bring them through up to 16, and then we know that UK is probably going to be their avenue, one, because they mightn't speak foreign language, two, that they might want to stay in the education pathway, that we need to protect their assets, and we need to treat it like a business model as well. The league is getting younger and younger. The First Division is such a young league now, really, really young league. The Premier Division is getting younger and younger. And I think if you look at our situation at Pats, we don't have the biggest first team squad in the world. Last weekend, we had two goalkeepers on the bench and we had four kids. Billy King, I think, was on the bench as well. He came on for Ronan Coughlin early. You're talking Tommy Lonigan, 17, James Mbank was 17, Keen Corbley, I don't think was on, Ross Fay's first time on the bench. And he's a great example, because on that point, Dan, Ross Fay would have came up through the same team as Ben McCormick. And he would have been looking at Ben McCormick now for the last two seasons on a professional deal, getting chance in the first team. Ross Fay is an incredible young player. He's an incredible young man. Comes from the inner city in town. turns up training, gets the bus to train and trains properly. And finally, he got awarded with a place on the bench last weekend. So each player is on a different journey, and it's up to us to manage that expectations with the culture that we have in the club, a really good support network around them, because not every player who has a professional contract now will end up having a 15 or 20 year career. And the player who's not on a contract now at 16 and 17 might be that late developer, because as you would have said, you guys are around the league a long time. It was unheard of 5 years ago to give a 16-year-old a deal.
Like the striking thing I would say about the past Derry game last Friday, Jeremy, like I think there were 7 teenagers actually on the pitch. And you mentioned all the subs, and that's obviously from both sides, because Derry had Evan McLaughlin and Patrick Ferry. And I suppose the flip side of my previous point, and you've sort of half answered it there with the Ross Fay, Ben McCormack point, that I suppose the other side is if you're under 17s or whoever are watching James the Banker come on into the game, really get involved, sort of rise to the challenge of the siege. It's a great lift, I suppose, for everyone else in a certain way too. And there's this whole thing about the underage leagues for all the controversy around them. And we understand what it is. I don't want to go down that road completely too much. Even that sense of probably identity and feeling with the club can be strengthened a bit if they see more of their own out on the first team pitch. So that's the good side of this equation here, isn't it?
Dan, when I took this role over at the end of 2016, start of 2017, the owner said to me that we want to produce the best players in our academy that can play in Air Force team. We want the best academy in the country. We want to have the best success on the pitch, which, you know, people look at that when they speak about winning and underage football as a little bit of a taboo subject. Oh, you can't speak about that. But we want that. We want our players to want to win. We want winners going up that when Stephen O'Donnell brings them up into the first team, that they're already committed and they know what it takes to win football matches. So I have no problem saying that. Yes, it goes 100% hand in hand with developing these players physically, mentally, tactically, technically, all those things, they go hand in hand with it. But in order for us to have a successful academy to bring those players in, one, I like to go back to that saying, human nature, every kid wants to win. Whether we want to win as much as they do is not the point. Every kid wants to win. So we have to give them that platform to win football matches. When they move up into the environment like that, like you said, the 17s, the 18s, the 19s, they know now that we have, I suppose, a policy internally in the club that if you're good enough, you will be given an opportunity. Whereas roll back 5, 6, 7, 8 years, not just at Pats, but all around the league, the average age was a lot more. Like I remember the likes of Darren Markey coming through, Sean Hoare coming through, Jamie McGrath coming through. It took them forever to get games, like forever. And even though they were around first team for so long, it took them so, so long to get games. Now we've got Darragh Burns, who for me was the best player on the pitch in the first half last week. You've got young Evan McLaughlin coming on from Derry, who looks like he's going to be a real, real prospect, and how he kind of moves around, gets on the ball and plays. That's the way it's gone, without a shadow of a doubt.
And just from Adam Murphy's perspective, I suppose you're being very, very honest there. This is the first thing that came to my mind. What's the benefit to the player who's 16 and is obviously a hot prospect to sign for a League of Ireland club on a pro term? And does he have like potential agents sniffing around in the background saying, no, hold out here. I know there's Brexit, but it's actually your benefit not to do this. So what's the benefit to the player apart from a few quid?
Well, being honest with you, Johnny, I think 2 years is a very long time in football, and it's a very long time for a young player. At Pats, we're full-time in terms of that we train in the mornings. And in order for a player to be able to do that, he's got to be able to manage his school time and his education with the football side of things. You talk about agents. Listen, everyone has an agent now. Every kid has an agent. We meet all types of agents. We meet some really good ones. We meet some not so good ones. I think it's about communicating to them. And then what we do is, I think we've built up enough credits with the parents over the number of years that when we sit down, we have an open, honest conversation. And there's a lot of trust there from both sides. And what we lay out the facts of what, like, years gone by, the agent would have said, oh, you don't sign a pro deal because you'll never get out of there. They'll price you out of a move, which is, it's just not true. Like, you know what I mean? It's not true at any level. If a player doesn't want to be here, he will get out eventually.
Yeah,
you know, he will eventually, whether he's 16 years of age or whether he's 26 years of age. If he doesn't want to play at a football club, he will get out. In terms of us, we got to make sure that, like you said, in normal times, without Brexit, the likes of Adam Murphy, Kevin Zeffy, Cottle Heffernan, all those boys would have been gone. They wouldn't be in the underage national leagues or League of Ireland clubs. They would have been in the UK by now. playing a trade probably under 18s, maybe even dropping into under 23s now and again. They go off the radar, they come back on the radar every now and again in terms of international stuff. Then all of a sudden someone might make a bench, and then all of a sudden there's a clamour around them. It looks like he's going to get forward, and then all of a sudden he disappears and he drops out again. Whereas now, we're just sort of saying, listen, all of the clubs need to be singing off the same sheet. And I've spoken to the likes of Liam Kearney, I've spoken to Shane Robinson, you know, spoken to Kevin McHugh, Paddy McCourt, all these guys, we're all on the same page. We know that we have some fantastic players right the way down through the academy, from 14s all the way to 19s. The ones that we feel need to be challenged. And it's not about looking and saying, oh, well, he's definitely going to go away at 18, because things can change in 2 years. But we owe it to them players to give them a platform and an environment where we can challenge them. And if they're not being challenged at 17s with their own age group, what's the point? It's not going to benefit us as a club. It's not going to benefit the agent. It's not going to benefit the player or the parent. So we're only a small little stepping stone on their career, whether they stay for Pats for the next 10 years or they jump ship in 2 years or 5 years or whatever that might be. We're only a small stepping stone. But the part that we have them, it's my job, it's Stephen O'Donnell's job, it's the football club's job to make sure that we're giving them and we're challenging them in the best environment that they can be, whilst also giving them that stepping stone, that platform to be the best footballer and best human being that they can be, that if they do have a career in the game, they can look back and say, I made the right decision that time.
And it was one of the disappointing things for me with Dundalk throughout the whole great story of their last sort of 6-7 years, is they brought through so few players through academies and so forth. Looking at, say, Shamrock Rovers last night, only Shamrock Rovers had one player in the pitch who actually came through their academy. And, you know, they've lost their second team this season. And I thought that was disappointing as well, because Stephen Bradley's given so much kind of young players, you know, scope to come through. But just going back to that thing about the government, I've spoken about this a bit before. The government, we've had a situation where our Taoiseach was happy to present the Premiership back in the day. That was the level we were at, where we were a disgrace of a country, really. We had to export all our kids and all of the negatives that ensued if you didn't make it. But surely the clubs need to come together, because, like, there's a very fractured political system in Ireland now, where there's, you know, Sinn Féin might be the biggest party, but there are a lot of parties scrapping for kind of favour. And I think there would be a good reaction from the various leaders. I mean, who's going to turn down the idea of supporting football within this country and putting money not towards wages but towards an academy, so that Longford Town can pay young coaches in the Midlands, in what is essentially a deprived area, to work for Longford Town and bring young players through?
There was a big piece in the Sunday papers there a while ago. I'm sure you remember that.
The Business Post, yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, in fairness, Dave went around the whole country getting
different. That was David Snaid in the Business Post.
Yeah, it was really good. And I spoke on the record today for a while, and I know he had so much to do, and I'm not sure. The biggest problem, and I know, Dan, you touched on it, the schoolboy clubs has been the biggest problem, and it's the stuff that's been pulling everything down. Now, when I say that in the best possible way. I'm not saying what happened was right.
And we obviously don't have the schoolboy clubs here to say you're wrong, so we obviously just respect that.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that what was right, what happened to them, in any stretch of the imagination. What I'm saying is it has happened to them. But we can't keep looking back now and thinking, oh, well, you know, if this doesn't happen and we move this age group and this age group. The biggest problem we have in this country now, without a shadow of a doubt, and this is where it really needs to hit home at government level, lads, is that we won't have the Adam Oidas, we won't have the Queeby and Kellers, we won't have the Adam Oidas, the Knights, the Connollys, all of those lads, we won't have any of them in Cat 1 academies now. It's up to us domestically to look after that. So if we're struggling as a national team now to bring through all the top players in terms of Premier League, and I know international has been another different conversation, but our duty of care now is to be these top performing young players. We have fantastic coaches in this country, really good coaches. Some coaches, as you said, Johnny, that are not even getting paid, that are travelling the length and breadth of the country, sometimes twice on the weekend. If they're doing, you know, some coaches in Finn Harps could be coming to Dublin on a Saturday, could be back up and to Derry on a Sunday, or down to Cabin Monaghan on a Sunday. That's just the way it is in this country, and it's not right. And if government realise and sit back, and I know Micheál Martin spoke, and I know Jack Chambers and all these, and we get little sound bites now and again, and everyone gets giddy and excited, but nobody actually puts the foot on the throat to these guys. And it has to be done as a collective from all of us, from clubs, from parents, from players, from journalists, from newspapers, everything. And we all get so excited. And you guys are in the media. And I know you guys get paid to write Colm Inches, and the big thing would have been the Euros and everything else around it. And I'm looking at social media on Sunday and I'm scratching my head about everyone so rejoicing about England. Yeah, there's a rivalry there, but it's almost we're all forgotten.
Look at us, like,
yeah, like we're shambles in the grand scheme of things. We're a shambles around the country. And taking, I don't get bogged down on little things, I don't get bogged down on European results, I don't get bogged down, you know, on little things like that. As a collective, we need to do a hell of a lot better. The government needs to do better. The FAI need to do better. The clubs need to do better. You guys in the media who work in these organisations, you need to push it from your end and do better as well. And we all need to row in the same direction and put them under severe pressure. And I'm not talking, you know, oh, here's 3 million. That's chicken feed. We need a plan. We need 200-300 million over the next 10 years. We need that to, we need somebody to come in and put it into our infrastructure, put it into our academies, put it into more pitches, put it into support networks now in the academies. When I started playing football in this country, which was a long time ago now, we had a first team and we had a reserve team, stroke 21s, I think it might have been at the side. It was jumping up and down. Dan might remember that a bit more. Mm. Now we've actually football clubs. We've kids coming in at 12 and 13 years of age. We've 70-odd kids in the academy. We've 70 sets of parents. We've first-team players. You know, it just needs to be better and it needs to be demanded more. It needs to be, like, we've had issues in the underage over the last couple of weeks, which I won't go into details, but internally, I've been speaking to Mark Scanlon, I've been speaking to Pat Duffy, I've been speaking to Will Clark. We can't just let mediocrity creep in because it's just accepted then. So we need to actually stand up and say, no, we're not accepting that. We're not actually going to play. Just scrap it. Just scrap it. We're not going to play until you guys fix it or we fix it as clubs. And it needs to be happening in the first team and I'm not on the first team level. And I know there's a lot of stuff going on in the All-Ireland League and will it happen, won't it happen and stuff like that. That's a different conversation. But from a club's perspective, from the FAI's perspective, we need to be sitting down at government level. We need to be sitting down with the top brass in government level and trying to lay out a plan. And I've seen Will's stuff before I used it. Myself, Kevin McHugh, Will showed us this weeks and weeks and weeks ago. And he presented it to the staff of the underage and the international, and they were shocked by it. We weren't shocked by it. We're one of four countries that, on average, doesn't have one full-time staff member working in an academy. I'm full-time. Shane Robinson's full-time. Mike Gagan, I think, is full-time. I don't know many other full-time staff members around the country working in the academy. So, you know, it's us. I think it's Andorra, I think it's Luxembourg, and I think it's Northern Ireland. We're four of the countries. So when people look at us losing to Slovakian teams and Estonian teams and wherever else we're going to lose to, why is everyone so shocked? What are we basing on that we have the right to beat them? We don't have a right to beat them.
Yeah, no, it's sort of extraordinary, even some of the countries that had 9-10. And I saw the Estonian chant. I know we're talking about European results, and listen, they could have all imported players for all I know, but like I saw the Estonian champions winning away last night comfortably, and you're sort of thinking, oh God, you know, 10 years ago Shamrock Rovers beat the Estonian champions in this round, you know, and like this is the and you would have played against clubs from the Baltics yourself in your European career. You see how some of those countries are coming on now, and it happens for a reason, you know. I what I'm interested in, we had Conor O'Grady on a couple of weeks ago. And he actually did reference he made the point that for all, they're doing great stuff with their academy, but they probably need to sell a player. They need that Gavin Bazunu in some respects. And he did make the point that Gavin Bazunu probably, you know, for the league in some respects, that a player who went to a top club from a League of Ireland club for a reasonable amount of money, like with all that you're doing there, Pat's, like, and you have an owner there who's supporting it, but clearly you have to in some shape or form make the academies pay. You know, like this is a part of the game. Clearly players going away at 16, we know that you're going to get smaller compensation levels than you're entitled to at 18. And how important is that, one, from your perspective, but even I just wonder, even in terms of like government and all the debate, like, do we need one or two success stories to really push the argument that League of Ireland clubs can do it? And I hate talking in those terms, but you know all the language has been said, well, the schoolboy players have done this, 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 and this with this generation of Ida and, you know, that sort of that 2000, Nathan Collins and that group. But do we need one or two more standard bearers from the league to make that point?
Yeah, I think that will come, Dan, like, to be honest with you. Yeah. I, think that will come. And what we will find is we will find players now, because of the Brexit stuff, we will find players that will be making their debuts at 16 and 17. And then when 18, they'll jump with probably 20 or 30 games behind them. They'll jump for bigger fees.
Well, Bazuna has to be a great example there. And he's also a typical kid that's coming through. He fits all the criteria you're talking about.
Absolutely. And do you know what? The thing about it is, Rovers have modelled the academy and the business plan fantastically well. And I'll tell you why, because if you had went up to Rolstone 6 or 8 weeks before, you would have got Gavin Bazuna out for a fraction of the price. And that's the truth of it. Because Stephen Bradley went, you know what, we'll just put him in, let's see how it goes. He came in, I think his first game being against Gray. Conor Kenny got sent off after a couple of minutes. It was a comfortable night for him. All of a sudden, the nerves are gone. He does really well. He makes that save in Cork. I'm sitting up watching a European game for Rovers, and the one he played maybe against the Finnish team or something like that.
No, it was AIK from Sweden. AIK, yeah.
It was, yeah. And, you know, he's obviously made that save in the second leg, and I'm sitting around and I'm noticing these people, and I'm saying, right, he's a goalkeeping coach at Newcastle. He's a goalkeeping coach at City. He's a goalkeeping coach. And these guys are obviously just being told, listen, you need to go and talk. You need to go and watch this kid. See how he gets on. 6 weeks ago, they would have got him out for probably 30 grand, 40 grand. And that's the reality of it, is it? That if we don't market ourselves, and this is what I'm saying, we don't have a proper industry. Could you imagine any other country? And I always say, listen, the likes of Scandinavia, Finland, they'd never sell a player for 30 grand. Never in their right mind would they sell their best 16-year-old for 30 grand, because their best 16-year-old would be in the first team. Mm-hmm. And that's stupid. He'd be in the first team. You look at, who was I talking to during the Euros? Was it Croatia or something like that had a 16-year-old? The Czech Republic had a 16-year-old.
Played against Dundalk. There's a kid who came on for Croatia. He's 23 now, but he played in Stephen Kenny's, I think his first European campaign at Dundalk. Hydrick Split back in 2014. Yeah, he came off and he scored at 16. Yeah.
That's what these countries do. They put them in. They don't turn around and go, well, and listen, it goes around full circle, because we've got managers here that are saying, well, what am I going to put a 16-year-old in for? I'll tell you why, because I can't, because European prize money is worth X amount of money. And if I don't get those 3-4 positions at the top, because I might not get it with him. And that's exactly what happens. Whereas if we start to model ourselves and drip feed in an Adam Murphy and a Ben McCormick and a Dara Burns, and Rovers will drip feed in theirs and Bowles will drip feed in theirs, then we've got to look and say, okay, now all of a sudden these players are worth a hell of a lot more, because I can guarantee you someone coming to buy a Dara Burns now is not going to get him out for chicken feed. Someone coming to buy a Dawson Devoy or any of these boys, Ross Tierney, they're not going to get them for what he would have got them probably a year ago. And that's just the reality of it. So everyone has to be on the same wavelength. And that's, I suppose, there's so many clubs up and down the country that, you know, from frustrations that academy managers don't have relationships, proper relations with their first team managers, because they know that if money comes in through the academy, well, then it probably is going to be used in the first team to buy a centre forward or a centre back to make sure they stay in division or make sure they challenge for Europe or make sure they try and win the league. And that's just the reality of it. Whereas I'm very conscious of my role and my position. We have to run the club like a business. There's no point in me keeping going to Gareth Kelleher every year and saying I need more money for the academy when we're not actually bringing things in. Now, what I will say is, I can actually sit back and I can openly say, listen, Gareth, Dara Burns now is in the first team. Ben McCormick's in the first team. You know, Adam Murphy, first team. James Abanko, first team. None of these would be getting the astronomical wages of what people in the past would have got. So there is a way up that you need to say, okay, well, we're actually bringing through our own players now, rather than having to go out and sign someone with a transfer fee from the UK or Scotland or France or Germany or wherever it is, and pay them silly money, put them in accommodation as well. And all of a sudden, when you add up the package, you're like, wow, we could have given 10 lads in the academy contracts for that. So we're all very conscious that it has to work, it has to go hand in hand. You have to be good enough. You have to be, you know, ready to kind of step up into the environment of the first team. And listen, we have a very good pathway at the club at the moment. It's great to see, but you're right, Dan. We need to kind of wait over the next couple of years to see the next one move and the next one going after that and so forth and so on.
I think one other thing as well, just the massive influx of foreigners to the country the last 2 or 3 decades has been just such a boon for our clubs. Like it's even incredible in Galway. Like you just see the different kind of, you know, characters on the pitch now from when I was a kid. And that's something that I think government needs to be told about, particularly when we've such a basically, you know, an Irish white set of TDs. There's no real representation of modern society in government. It's just like the same set of people, whereas that's not the case in football. But on that note, when I do see, like, I didn't know anything about this Glorian Zingo guy. He signed for Stade de Reims last week in kind of in the midst of all of the players signing. How does something like that happen? And just for me, it's fascinating to see. It might happen with Zeffi obviously going to Italy, but a young Irish player going over to a club in France at that age, how does that happen?
Like I would have said earlier, every kid now has an agent, and I know it was well documented during the week, so I'll say I heard Glory has signed up with an agency called Wasserman, which are based all around Europe, and they're such a big agency, and the guys who we've been dealing with were very good, and they ask questions. Glory's been back and forth with the different clubs, and they ask questions from us, would we be willing to allow him to kind of make a trip over to France? And we did, and he done really well. And the beauty of it is Glory actually speaks fluent French. The heritage is there. So, but you're right, Johnny. We've got so many kids coming up. We've got, you know, Albanian kids. We've got Lithuanian kids. We've got Malaysian kid. We've got... you know, kids from all different places in Africa. We've got kids from who would have been from, their parents would have been from there, who were actually born in Ireland. And, you know, they're all from different cultures, different backgrounds. And I would have spoken previously on this and said that, listen, it's a fantastic environment to bring them in, because they're all made up differently genetically. They're all made up differently from personalities. And it really is good to see. And a lot of people's wrong time. So the chances are, when we knew we got Glory, that we'd probably lose him. I honestly thought that with Brexit here, we probably would have got him in and had him in around the first team over the next number of years before he would have moved. But when something like that does come up in terms of the continent and the kid wants to move, and we were able to manage to get a deal done, well then, you know, we wish him the best of luck. He's had a fantastic little couple of years with us. He's had a little bit of success winning the double F15s and winning the trophy at 17s and 19s last year. So again, I go back to that point, it's a little stepping stone for Glory in his football career.
Just Gerard's last question, because we have to go to your old gaffer Liam Buckley now in a minute, but with all these players and different backgrounds and nationalities and technical skills, Have you got anyone coming through to rival Chris Forrester yet in that department? And I mean, as a last question, I mean, how much of a buzz, I've heard you speak about Chris before, how much of a buzz is it for you to see him back out playing, enjoying his football and scoring a goal like last Friday?
Yeah, Dan, it's really good, because not a lot of people know all the background, what happened with Chris when he came home. And the problem is, people criticise Friday night's performance, and that's all they see. They don't see the human side of Chris, you know, Monday to Sunday. They see 90 minutes on a Friday night and everyone judges that. You know, so many people wrote him off. He's finished. He's not got his hunger. He's not got anything. And this is where sometimes we can get so, you know, caught up in the 90 minutes of football and not understanding what's going on. Chris is an unbelievable person, and he's gone through a lot, and I'm absolutely chuffed that he's really shown again to people that how good of a player he is. And he's probably a little bit unfortunate that he didn't get picked for the Irish thing to go away, you know, on the end of season camp. I thought from his performances, he could have been in and around, and he's the type of player that we need. And I think Chris is the type that, like he showed a few years ago in Stamford Bridge, that when he's playing with better players around him, you know, against better players, Chris normally just steps up to the plate as well. But in terms of what's coming through, listen, it's very hard to replicate a Chris Forrester. We've got, that's just a natural street footballer who's able to do it time and time on Friday night. And not just his goals, some of Chris's passes this year, his work rate, his hunger, his communication, everything is just first class. And yeah, it's great to see. Right, listen,
thanks a million for your time, Ger.
Really appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
Let's get your old buddy, Liam Buckley. Just in relation to the game last week, I didn't watch it, but the feeling was it kind of was one maybe that got away on you a bit.
I knew there wasn't going to be a lot in it, because we'd seen quite a bit of them in previous weeks. And it'll be tight again tomorrow night. I've no doubt they won't be going gung-ho to try and beat us 2-3 or 4-0, you know, the kind of way. They'll try and, there'll be a lot of counter-attack stuff. So we need to be patient in possession. But look, we've spoken about it all week. We've reviewed the match again from our end of it and what we can do better. There was quite a few areas that we need to be improved from last week. So hopefully we can get that. And if we get that improvement, it will give us a real chance to win the game, you know, the kind of way. So, and I do see us playing better. That said, as I said, with due respect to them, they've done okay. They've created one or two chances themselves. And I've noted they'd be saying getting an away goal here. Not that that matters if it's away or at home, but nonetheless, if they were to go 2-0 up, puts them in the driving seat. So, you know, the first goal is obviously going to be important. But that said, listen, I think we're all ready for it. We're going to give it a right go.
I think it was the anniversary recently of Robbie Benson's goal in Warsaw, and it was put out that it might have been the best goal scored ever by a League of Ireland team in Europe. And I think a Pats fan replied that it wasn't even the best goal scored by a League of Ireland player in that ground, because he referenced the Pats goal when you were there, and how much you enjoyed nights like that in European football.
That was a fantastic occasion. In Warsaw, we were 1-0 up into going to the 94th or 2nd minute, I think it was, and we just gave one loose pass, and they pounced on it and bagged the late goal. We blew the whistle within 10 or 20 seconds, or whatever. Well, it was a tremendous team goal from where we're at. And so was the Docks, you know, the kind of way, Benson's as well, from a team point of view. His finish was fantastic, bearing in mind the quality of the finish. Ours was about the amount of passing and the link play that we had to get Christy that opportunity. But both fantastic goals. And got a fantastic occasion, may I say. And that's why it's so important that you try and get through these rounds, you know, the kind of way. And there is an opportunity here. It's an opportunity for that Icelandic team, an opportunity for us. You know, so listen, I've no doubt we'll both be gung-ho to try and get a second bite of the cherry here, you know.
Did you build a team with Europe in mind to some regards?
Not so much that, no. I mean, to be honest with you, getting a team from Sligo's end of it, we're geared around being competitive in the league, which we are, and I think we're not doing too bad there. From a European point of view, you just need to be better on the ball. You have to retain possession better. Now, we have done this in matches here, so you know we will have to throw in an 8 out of 10 performance, you know, the kind of way, or a 9 out of 10 to give ourselves a chance of getting something out of the game. But the possession is key. The Icelandic team, they kept reasonable possession of it last week at times, so especially playing out in the back. So we need to address all that.
Just in relation, obviously we're talking about Shamrock Rovers last night, that they didn't actually have any players on the pitch, we'll say, I think off the top of my head anyway, that came through the academy. And finally, just how proud are you of the amount of young players that have come through in recent games from the academy and from the region in general to represent Sligo Rovers?
I'm delighted, I have to be honest. You know, the academy coaches and the setup we have in the club is testament to what we have now in the first team. They've done a tremendous job there. You know, I've took them in from the under-19s, a few of the guys here, but there's been quite a few of them. But they're in the team on merit, like they're proper footballers. There's nothing wrong with them, you know, kind of. They're proper footballers here, and I've no doubt that they definitely have a bright future going forward. And we've still got one or two on the sidelines here that are just waiting for their opportunity and chance, you know. And it will come, please God, over the next period of time for them. But like, probably we'll have five or six, let's say half our bench tomorrow will be academy players. On top of all the ones that we have in the team, you know, the kind of way. But as I say, they're in the team of merit. They're all applying themselves properly in training. They all want to do well. Their conditioning is good. And they do want the club to do and go better. So hopefully, as I say, we will get more of them coming through. But the key one now tomorrow is for the ones that are playing, that we turn up and make sure we give ourselves a chance. Because I just hope that it's not just one game experience for these guys this year, you know, the kind of way. Because if we can get through, you've obviously got another couple of games. It's four games in Europe. And if you can get six out, that's great. If you don't, you get four. Okay, that's good experience for them going forward. Because I've no doubt they should be chasing Europe every year, you know, from a league point of view. And if they do qualify for Europe every year, well, then look at, you know, the more experience they get, the better.
Because I guess then league games come and go. But these are the nights nearly that you remember, or maybe that you're remembered by as well in some respects.
Look, it's the biggest game of the season so far for us, obviously, because if you win it, you're going to jump into the next round. Now, that said, as I said to them, when you're top of the table, the next game is the biggest game, you know, kind of, because you want to stay top of the table. We've got the FAI come forward to look forward. We've got Cork coming up here in a couple of weeks. So, you know, it's important that, you have a winning mentality, you know, the kind of way. And with due respect to all the guys here, they're trying extremely hard. There is one or two areas that I need to improve, which I'm conscious of. And I know John and myself, we're working on that to try and get certain aspects to our game better. But I do see it's improving, and please God, as I say, we put in a good performance tomorrow, and it'd be great for the club and our supporters and sponsors and all that goes with the club, you know.
Very best of luck. Thanks, Liam.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
And obviously, Liam Buckley there was looking forward to the game against F. Howe. With Sligo Rovers 1-0 down after, I think, what I didn't see the game now, but everyone I think said it was basically a blatant dive by Greg Bulger, reduced him to 10
men. He said it himself.
Yeah, it was just one of these things. And then obviously it went 1-0 down. But like, I don't know. I know from talking to Sligo fans that they're well in the game. I watched Bowes and Starnan, and Bowes were definitely the better team. So I'm kind of hopeful both of these teams go through. It'd be a massive, massive letdown, Dan, obviously, if Bowes didn't. We'll talk to the lads. But Sligo, this is big stuff for Sligo.
Yeah, my slight concern with Sligo Rovers is that when you think you look back to the Shamrock Rovers game just before the break, and like big stars in that game for them were McGinty, John Mahon,
not playing,
Bulger, the spine of the team. They've come into Europe, these two ties, with the spine of the team weakened. And that would be a concern. Now, you know, our Icelandic journalist said last week FH weren't in a great place at the moment. By listening to the reports, I'm like you, I didn't see that game because I was travelling back from the Dundalk one at the time. You know, it seems like, I was dealing with Patrick McElhenney madness at the time, which we haven't actually spoken about. But either way, it feels like they're not a great opponent, but I still have a slight unease. I'm going to Sligo now, and I'm looking forward to going to the game. And I think if they can, they can click and attack in areas like they did against Bowes. Johnny Kenny back in the mix, which is good. But I just have a slight concern. Now, listen, Luke McNicholas did well last week. I don't think that was an issue. Shane Blaney is a good defender. David Codd, who's got loads of experience. But what they've had this year in the spine of the team is like, it's not a reflection of the players coming in. It's just the harmony they've had between them all. That Bulger and Morahan link, you know, the Mahon and Gary Buckley link. And I think it's just typical that it's for these big European games with like 300 grand at stake and league and all that this is when they've had their problems. And that's my slight fear. But for all we talk about the away goals rule being good for Irish clubs, it's actually great that it's gone this week because Sligo would be goosed, you know, if FH.
Only Bowes would be in a better position and like Bowes won't be worrying about that anyway. They weren't going to draw nil all in the BBC.
No. But Sligo now are in a situation where it wouldn't shock you if FH scored, shock you if Sligo won 2-1, you know what I mean? And then it goes the distance. So we'll see. I'm hopeful, but I'm maybe not as confident as I thought I would be. And yet, like after an hour last week in both games, it felt like both were equipped to go through, you know? We'll get to it before that. We'll do a four-star pizza question here, by the way, because it is a bit like related to listen to what's been said earlier in the show.
This Dan did a little dance while he said that. Congratulations to Tom Byrne, who I didn't mention at the top, Dan, last week. He's a Galway United fan. He's a Galway United fan. I'm afraid I was ashamed to admit it, but he's a Galway United fan. Yeah, he's actually a member of my media team.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Johnny. Oh, okay. You didn't, we could have got away with that one. I mean, when it's the actual mascot that wins it, it's harder for us to cover.
Harry the Tiger.
Did you ever get a photo of the mascot eating the pizza?
Actually, no, and I mean that's a very photographic opportunity. We're having a debate.
What the hell did we do?
Yeah,
I mean, how mascot?
I sorted.
I mean, mascot have very big paws, right? Is the tiger of paws, or what does the tiger?
Yeah,
have?
Yeah. It'll be tricky for him. He's smudging all over his kind of his outfit there. And I don't want to anger a tiger either. So I'll leave him to eat his pizza. We're having a big.
Like that, it's like that airplane. The movie Airplane back today or something. Yeah. Problem, and they just pour the water over their face. He's got an eating disorder. He's got very big.
Just want to tell you, we're all counting on you, Terry the Tiger. But no, we're having a poll in Galway at the moment to name our Galway United beer. How with the success of the Bowes beer and the Bray Wanderers beer? So there are four suggestions. Galway of a brew, Check DC. Right.
What's the second one?
Check DC, which I quite like.
Okay.
Tribal Pills. Which is quite nice. And Tribal, which is my suggestion, which is going well in the poll at the moment. So
what's the thinking of Tribal?
Because it's Tribal and then all is obviously
a play. Tribal. I see what you did there. Yeah.
Very clever. So I can see why it shouldn't win, but I certainly think it should win. And I'd love to say, by the way, to literally every visitor at Eamon DC Park, and you remember Juz the Hoop, Justin, when he came for his stag party that time.
You've only mentioned it 8 times. Yeah.
He'd a great stag. Imagine seeing every single visitor, oh, by the way, that was my idea. Like, I'd be even more annoying than I already am. But it's a tight race at the moment in that poll anyway. What's the four-star pizza question?
First, that pizza question is, if people have been paying attention to questions or topics discussed earlier, it's this is an easy one, but we're going to have a lot of Pats listeners this week, hopefully, because that was a very interesting chat with Gerard Brown that we had on a number of areas, mm-hmm. we should say. And we'll probably return to some of the academy issues again, because it's a consistent theme with Conor O'Grady and people we've had on. But yes, the question is, you reference St. Patrick's Athletic playing against Legia Warsaw back in the day. Who was the Pats player that that completed that team move to score?
What a goal it was.
Yeah, so name the player. LOI Central, usual rules apply. At LOI Central Pod on Twitter, hashtag LOI Central. The score of that goal. I mean, can't really talk about
second. Actually, which of the two of goals were you more of a fan of? I was in Warsaw.
I can't discuss the goals there because I can't.
Which goal were you more a fan of, though?
Ah, but listen, well, Robbie Benson's was unreal in the years because it was in the middle of it was the moment where you thought an Irish team might qualify for the Champions League. I don't think, with all due respect to our Pats listeners, you could have a beauty contest and debate it. But that was an amazing moment. I mean, you had the stadium was half empty for 2014. For this one, you had the big fan display behind the goal because this was the historic night and it was a pin drop moment.
You said it so many times, Dan. These League of Ireland games, like your average League of Ireland
Johnny Ward said the night before they were going to get turned over 5-0. We had an argument about that. Mr. Optimistic about the league. You had a couple of try bowls then at that stage, didn't you?
Hey. But no, like as you said it before, if you put Derry City and St. Pat's in front of an arena like that and that audience, like I'm telling you, the League of Ireland is a good standard. Shane Blaney.
What would Pat Dolan name the beer if he had a say in it? You know,
hey.
Has he got a vote? Has he given him one?
Yeah, I hope he drinks it. And if he does, I'd be like, by the way, Pat, it was me that came up with that name. Let's get to Andy Lyons, who's our first interviewee from Daily Mount. And then very briefly at the end, arguably the best goalkeeper in the league, I would say, in James Talbot.
Even today here down in Daily Mount, you can see everyone bringing the flags and buying merchandise and all that kind of stuff. So it is exciting to see, and you know, people stopping you here, there and everywhere asking about the game. So yeah, no, it is. We're really looking forward to it now. And obviously that fan backing makes a big difference as well, doesn't it?
Do you feel any different playing in terms of the intensity of the game? Because people are sort of judging what the League of Ireland level is this season, but maybe others are saying, well, there are no crowds and it's hard to kind of know.
Yeah, I suppose it is hard to kind of know, isn't it? Like, I suppose the fans, you wonder, like, it does make such a big difference. So does that make an impact on the standard of quality? I'm not sure. Like, but as always, I think personally, the standard of the League of Ireland is increasing every year. Certainly when I came in 3-4 years ago, I think the standard is up massively. So I think the standard is constantly growing, and long may it continue.
And your experience European football last season, I think everyone was kind of raving about your performance afterwards. That must have given you some taste for it.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. I think playing in Europe at 19 last year was a brilliant experience, and I think we played a really, really good side last year, didn't we? So I think just even for the whole group, getting that experience, obviously it was my first time playing in European football. I think it was probably a lot of the lads playing European football the first time as well. So I think that gaining that experience was massive. And then obviously we could bring that experience and use it this year, hopefully, to our advantage.
What did you find of the level?
Yeah, look, it was a really good level, I think. Even the Iceland team, like they have plenty of internationals in their side, you know. The team that we played last year, Faroe, they had, you know, numerous internationals. So, you know, you are going up that step, you know. It's an old cliche, but you're going up that step one bit further. And even you look at Dundalk last year playing the likes of Arsenal. So, you know, you can step up to that standard, and it's just about doing that and performing on the pitch when you get the chance.
And how did you feel you got on for the 21s as well? Not that long ago, obviously, against Australia. That's another level again.
Yeah, look, it is. And it's all about levels, isn't it? And that's another level. And I suppose it's under 21s, it's a national. You probably find a lot of them lads will be going to the first team. And you can even look at our first team at the moment, with the likes of Adam Ida, Jason Knight, Aaron Connolly, the likes of them lads. They've all made that step up from 21s to first team. So, and when you do make that step up, you've got to make it count. But yeah, look, it's a really good standard, and I suppose it's really getting ready for that first team football, isn't it?
And I guess you're a quintessential right back. How do you monitor the way the game is developing with, like, England switching between a 3 and a 4? There are wing backs, full backs, and what position, I guess, of the two would you prefer, or does it matter to you?
Yeah, look, to be fair, I haven't played the 3 at the back much, but it's obviously a much different role because a lot of the time you don't have a winger in front of you. So Look at it the other day, like you look at Kieran Trippier, like he has no winger in front of him to play with, and obviously England reverted back to a four at the back after about 60 minutes. So yeah, look, they're completely different in what they are, completely different from positions. And I think a lot of time you consider a right back, you know, attacking right back as a wing back, but in fact it's actually a completely different position, because you don't kind of have that that interchange with your winger and kind of like that relationship as such, so you're kind of out on your own. So yeah, a lot of people think it is very similar, but personally I think it is, there's a big difference between the two.
And to be fair to both, like, you lost both your wingers last season, and you know, you've had a great season so far.
Yeah, I think, look, you know, obviously, you know, Chris and Danny were massive for us last year, so I think that kind of shows the gaffer and how good he is in the recruitment side of things, and obviously the backroom staff. And you know, the two lads we brought on this year, Ali and Liam, have been brilliant. Like, the two Scottish lads have been absolutely outstanding. Like, so but then again, it's forming relationships, isn't it? Like, even for myself playing at right back with Ali, like, obviously you know, I'd like to think him and Chris are probably, you know, different style of player. Like, Chris is probably more direct and Ali is more kind of like technical, coming to holes and stuff like that. So yeah, it's about gaining relationships, building relationships and trying to build on them.
And I guess some of the players that have come to the fore this year, obviously Kelly Devoy and in behind Tierney as well. It's a different both team, but it must be great to play in as well.
Yeah, look, it's brilliant, you know. I think two of the names you mentioned there, Ross Tierney and Devoy, like Dawson, you know, I've played with them the whole way up, like, so obviously we'd be good mates. And then obviously Georgie coming in has been absolutely brilliant for us, hasn't he? So, you know, Georgie's always been someone that I've, in the past, playing for Dundalk, is someone that I've always admired and someone that I've always looked at. So when he kind of came into the club, I was, you know, I was buzzing with that signing, because I think he's been brilliant in the league for the last few years. You know, so I think this year he showed his quality and he's been unbelievable for us. Then obviously Rossi behind him has been excellent with Dawson. The two of them are brilliant.
You spoke about that actually, the three of you coming up. Like, Pat's, I think, signed four players on professional contracts last week. There will be, like, I think one of them is as young as 16. What's your take? You're probably well kind of placed to view it, like, the take of that progression from the academies and what can be done, because Keith Long spoke about it last week that, like, maybe not all clubs are into the academies as much, but with Brexit now, there is a different onus on players to stay here as well.
Yeah, potentially there is. Like, obviously staying here with Brexit, it's a big difference, isn't it? You can't go to England until you're 18. But from a personal perspective, like, I think you look at the squad team we have now, there's probably 4, 5, 6, 7, whether it be in the starting lineup or on the bench, that have come through the ranks here. I think that gives credit to the club and the gaffer and the underage setup and the way it's been going. Like, obviously I started with the under 17s, the same with Rossi and Dawson, and became our way through the 19s and up to the first team. And then, as I said before, when you get that chance, you've got to take it, you know. And it's about getting them experiences as well. When you get the chance, it's about learning from the experiences, learning from the games you played. And sometimes it might be tough playing against bigger players, better players when you're younger, but, you know, you learn from them games and you build the experiences off that, and, you know, you get better as a result.
And what education do you have if you did move abroad at some stage?
Just a leaving cert.
Okay, so at least you got that done.
Yeah, I got the leaving cert done, which is brilliant. Like, but obviously I can go to college whenever I need. So, but at the moment, I'm fully focused on football. So, yeah.
Yeah, and just as well, I suppose another interesting, like, you see Zeffi is going to Italy. I think was it El Buzetti is going to Sweden. To AIK, and there are a couple of other kind of Irish players moving to non-British clubs. Which is that something that you would kind of consider down the line if you did leave Ireland? Does it have to be Britain if you did move?
Yeah, I think it's 100% an opportunity. I think a lot of people these days just consider England as the only outcome. Like, but. In fact, like, there's a lot of other places. You look at Dan Casey, who's gone to America from us last year. You look at Chris, who's gone to Poland. Like, so I think there's so many other options out there that maybe people kind of, like, you know, pull the wool over people's eyes and thinking England's the only place to go. But in fact, there's actually so many other clubs out there. There's so many other styles of play that maybe might suit other players and suit different players, you know. So yeah, 100%, I think Europe and abroad is definitely something that I'm looking at, and maybe younger people should look at as well.
You have faith in your own ability anyway, but obviously I suppose it's a long way to go in your career.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, look, I think you have to. If you don't believe in yourself, no one will. You know what I mean? So, you've got to be confident in your own ability. But yeah, no, yeah, I am indeed.
We're nearly done with that. Just the Euros. Did you enjoy it? You were telling the lads there you have a 10-year ticket at the Aviva Stadium, which is as the joke was, one of the few who paid for it or whatever. But did you enjoy the Euros and I suppose the Italian victory in the final and their defending and all that as well? The nature of defending, which you're so good at yourself.
Yeah, look, I think it's brilliant, isn't it? Like, I think in the modern game, you kind of see everyone as attacking and everyone wants to see attacking play, and I think the kind of Italians stripped it back a bit and just it was pure class defending, wasn't it? Like, and I think even just as like how cynical the centre backs were at times, like I think you saw with Cellini and Saka, like, and that just comes from experience, doesn't it? Like, and I think as I said before, like, everyone just loves the attacking game. And but sometimes when you look at the Italians, you just kind of remind yourself and you think, that's unbelievable defending, you know, when the centre back's coming through, his full back's coming through, you kind of look at them and think, that's the right way to play.
You want to move to Italy, do you?
Look, listen, if there's any clubs, you know what I mean? But no, Italy would be brilliant. Like, as I said, like,
the art of defending shouldn't be underestimated as well at the same time. Like, you see, as Dan was saying, Chiellini doing overlaps in the 122nd minute. Like,
yeah, 100%. And I think that's credit to him. It's credit to the Italians, the way they're so eager to defend, the way they've man-managed. I mean, they're, you know, looked after. You know, Roberto Mancini has them nailed down to the ground, doesn't he? Like, how they're going to defend. They know exactly what they're going to do, and think there was no grey areas whatsoever in terms of that. Like, and it was a brilliant watch, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? And you know, it was really exciting, the whole tournament overall.
Who's the best right back in the game
at this moment in time? Oh Jesus, I'm not too sure. I like Kyle Walker. I'm not gonna lie, I do like Walker. I think he's, you know, so quick. He's got a lot of experience. But then again, there's so many different types of players, isn't there? Like, you look at Kyle Walker, he's probably, you know, so good at defending. He's a real good defender. But then you have players like Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's probably better on the ball and maybe a bit more technical. So there's so many players out there to learn from. So it's probably good that you kind of have that bit of mixed qualities that you can kind of learn and pick and choose from each of their games and kind of learn from that.
Finally, Bowes tomorrow. I guess there'll be a lot of expectation that, you know, the papers are probably predicting Bowes to go through. Any danger of complacency, because it is 1-1?
No, I think there's no complacency in our squad whatsoever. I think you look at Iceland, it was a 1-1 draw. They're a really good side. They've plenty of internationals in their team. Like, you know, they're very well experienced. And obviously, we look in Europe last year, we thought we were, you know, brilliant getting the penalties, but at the end of the day, we lost. So we can't be complacent in any way whatsoever. Like, and we know these are good sides, so we've seen them play firsthand now, and no, we can't take anything for granted whatsoever.
It is mad as well, looking at yourself and Shane Supple, how kind of similar it is, coming back playing Gaelic football and coming back from England, you know, and thriving at Bowes. Like, what did you learn from him as well? Because it was, I think everyone was really sad that he had to retire so early as well, because he was obviously only 30 odd.
I was quite sad myself, because I wanted to work with him. I wanted to come in, and you know, I'm quite lucky enough that he does a few sessions with me this year. And to be honest with you, his voice is unbelievable. It's on a game day, whether it's during the week or whatever, he's really good, you know. He looked as soon as I came into the club, you know. Even when he had to retire, unfortunately for him, he looked after me and he gave me as much of his voice as possible, whether it was about the pitch, whether it was about the games, about the league in general, and what I had to do. And even to this day, like, as I said, he's doing a few sessions with us this year, and his voice is brilliant. And it's great to work with someone like that, because you don't get it too often.
You see as well, he came back to Bowes, but he really took the club to heart as well, which it seems to be a unique club in that regard. Obviously, Buckley cycling home from games, and you know, you just seem to have great togetherness or whatever.
Yeah, it's a game. That's why it's so important on tour as well, to have 6,000 people under the same roof. It's brilliant. It's going to be special, you know. It means that much more, because since the pandemic hit, they've stuck with us. It hasn't been easy. Like, I know I've friends who haven't been to games in so long, and you know, it's very difficult, and sometimes it can be easy for people to just kind of shy away or turn away from us, and kind of, oh well, I can't get to a game, I won't stop. But the support has been probably even more than when I first came to the club. The support has been unreal, and hopefully we can thank them with a win on Thursday. So and it's unbelievable to have them 6,000 in under the same roof. And it's going to be special, and it has that bit more motivation about it.
Actually, just on that, Dan, the Talbot debate, we spoke to him. He was very, 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 you know, portraying the party message. Like, he was really well behaved. Talbot is a really, he's a bundle of energy. I was talking to him afterwards, and we're having chit chat or whatever. Couple of things. Obviously, Stephen Bradley said that Alan Manus is the best goalkeeper in the league. James Talbot, to my mind, is definitely the best goalkeeper in the league, for what it's worth. And secondly, the bump around the goal at Daly Mount, and I've been going, I don't know what it was, if there was no paint on the pitch, so they're obviously really lining the pitch, whatever. I could not believe the bump around the goal. It looked like a golf course. Like, it was absolutely
It was one of the great. Yeah, I mean, I did hear the longer audio that you did send me with the James Talbot, and I mean, in the pantheon of great Johnny Ward tangents, I think, you know, mid question, just turning around and seeing the say what you see, what's the story with that mound over there? When, like, it's irrelevant to the fact that, like, Bows are playing in the Aviva on Thursday.
I know.
So the undulations of Daily Mount couldn't be any less relevant to the discussion you were having before this game. And really,
That got him more energized than any question I asked. He was so on message, the Bows message, that he actually sprung out of his kind of cloak.
Media shell.
He was actually energized by it. And it's mad. It actually looks like a golf course, genuinely.
Well, there you go. I mean, the Open's on this week, so there you go. I mean, speaking of bumps in the road, nice. Dundalk certainly hit one last Thursday and Vinnie Parrott, and I have to say, I'm not sure if Vinnie necessarily agreed with some observations that have been expressed about, say, the quality of Newtown, who they played and stuff like that, but... I don't think they were rubbish, but they are in pre-season, you know, so they were better in the second leg with some of their COVID players back. But listen, it was a dream draw to play them last week. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I have to say, when you finish a game and you win 4-0 in Europe, and you do a press conference and it's all good and it's a generally positive chat with 4-0 win, and then, you know, 20 minutes later, when journalists are still in the ground, the Derry City Patrick McIlhenny press release goes out and you have to face questions about that. Like, it sort of sums up aspects of Vinny's return for me so far, in that I think on the pitch, I think, you know, things have been going reasonably okay. Like, maybe if that penalty decision had been given in Talla, you know, we'd be having a very different discussion about Dundalk's form and their run. You know, that defeat obviously maybe halted their bit of momentum in terms of, they would have been, well, maybe 8 points off Rovers if that had gone to plan. Like, Vinny didn't really do any press around the second leg in Newtown, not even for the club after the game. And I sort of feel like, you know, he's in this situation now where no matter what he does, and listen, he's got in there in these terms with the eyes open. But no matter what he does, he is now the spokesperson for the club. Jim McGilton isn't doing press, say, anymore like he was doing every week. And Vinny is out there, you know, defending or deflecting things that in many respects are completely out of his hands. You know, the Chris Shields deal... You know, McIlhenny was always going to go to Derry. And we spoke before when he went in there that this is the deal he's taken. He was desperate for the job, desperate for the opportunity. But there may well be more outgoings from them. Every week I hear about a different player that's about to be released. I know some of that. Vinny will come and say it's clickbait and it's speculation, but a lot of this clickbait and speculation so far has proved to be true. So it's not actually clickbait, it's just accurate news stories. Like, I have to say, like, he's trying to do the job there, but it just feels like there's stuff going on above his head that he's not even going to be able to speak about.
Yeah, he wouldn't talk to the press after the game, obviously, which is interesting in Wales.
Well, after that, well, in Wales, yeah, there's no one travelled, but listen, that's by the by. I mean, maybe he's a bit miffed over how the McIlhenny thing was sprung on him. Now,
Do you know from the Rory Higgins comments about it, there's clearly a bit of bad blood between the two of them, or certainly they're not.
Absolutely no doubt. I think
that's interesting. In fairness, okay, I don't know what the reasons are behind that, but this is actually a bit of needle is no harm at all in the league when these teams play against each other. I've been going about all these young coaches, oh, they're great mates, blah, blah, blah. Better when they're not, when they don't really get on necessarily. And that's what we need. We need a bit of banter.
There is a real beef. And listen, I mean, you know, clearly, like, Higgins was a big member of that dressing room, and, you know, it's no surprise to see one or two players gravitate towards him. There's a Derry connection there, you know. Mm. Not a surprise that McIlhenny wants to go back and live in Derry. A lot of the Derry lads are homebirds as well, and, you know, I'd say Michael Duffy will probably end up there probably next season too, I would have thought. And, like, that's, you know, there's certainly real tension there. I mean, there's in the bottom line with the Dockers, they're still not in a position to offer anyone contracts anyway, so they're going to be.
Well, like, actually, can I get you on that, Dan?
All the players who are out of contract. Like, once you're out of contract within 6 months, you're entitled to talk to anyone. Whether Derry needed to announce it when they did, like, they would say the story was going to come out on Friday morning, and they wanted to announce it. I see that point of view. I'll put my journalist hat on. I would have had the story in January. Richie Tell was joining Shamrock Rovers. Everyone knew it was happening. But Rovers didn't announce it at that stage. Now, like, there'd be a different opinions on what you need to do, like, in that case. Have Derry lost players to Dundalk in recent seasons and has it scarred them? Probably has a bit. Was it a bit of a dig to do it that way? I'd say it probably was. Could they have announced before the game? They could have, and they didn't do that. Like there's a couple of sides to the whole thing, but if two managers who had worked together and had been through a lot of stuff together, you know, had a better relationship or had a good relationship, I don't think that would have happened. I think people from the outside can see that relationship is not particularly strong.
But to make it even more bizarre was the suggestion then that Derry want him not at the end of the season, but they're hoping to potentially get him before that, which just adds another layer to Dundalk's completely dysfunctional kind of 2021. Do you see that happening?
Well, I mean, honestly, McElhenney was the best player on the pitch probably last Thursday, or certainly in the top three. And if Dundalk play Livadia Tallinn until they get tied, presuming they get through, we wouldn't know that. If another Gibraltar team wins 5-0 in the return, maybe not. But whoever they play in the next round, there's $300,000 at stake. You know, they've sold Shields. The Shields went for like $20,000-$30,000. I don't understand how you would let a really good player go when Dundalk at the moment don't look like qualifying for Europe this season, and he's someone who can help them. So for a short-term hit of maybe $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 versus potentially $300,000 or, you know, whatever, something like, it would be absolute madness to let him go out.
But it's clear
that negotiations are happening with the chairman, and it seems that Chris Shields had a success with the chairman and his people had a success with the chairman in terms of saying, well, let me go now. Okay, Shields had long service with the club. McElhenney not there as long. And also Shields was not going to a rival, whereas McElhenney, in theory, like, could end up knocking Dundalk out of the cup or out of the league or something if you let him go. So a functioning club wouldn't do it, but they're not a functioning club. You know, but it would make absolutely no sense. But I mean, as I said, like, the people making the decisions, you know, maybe they're even a soft touch for players and people who speak to them sometimes. I've actually, you know, my view on the Dundalk officialdom sometimes now, you know, it's changing. And sometimes I think that a chairman in Florida who hasn't been in Ireland in so long, you know, maybe they can be spun any version of events by many people. And I actually think there's an element of that that's happened with some of the stuff that's gone on as well. I don't think they're convinced with McElhenney's injury record, but it's no reason to let him go now.
So, like, we're coming to the end of the show here. Thanks ever to FutureTicketing.ie, and thanks to 4-Star Pizza for our prize. But before we go, the FAI
fixtures.
Cup.
FAI Cup are all fixtures.
I'll throw out the FAI Cup fixtures.
We're not going to do all the fixtures, Johnny, because we'll
the main ones then, Dan. Obviously, Sligo Rovers, Cork City, which is interesting. Shamrock Rovers, Galway United, Derry City, tough draw for them at Drogheda. Probably the main.
Derry Drogheda is the tied around by an absolute.
No, it isn't. Galway United have won five games in a row.
Go on.
91. You know, I mean, there's a massive 30-year sort of resonance going on.
Yeah,
here.
Listen. I mean, in your mind, I know what the biggest game is.
I would love it if we.
I'm pretty sure someone at that game is going to have won a pizza like in the previous.
Actually, there was a great live on the stream last night where Gartlin was doing the co-com with
Graham.
Yeah. Graham Gartlin was doing the co-com with
Des Curran.
With Des Curran, and Des Curran was like, well, obviously, you know, the last time Slovan Bratislava were in Tala, 9 of their players were playing in that night against Dundalk. And then he goes, well, half of the Dundalk team are playing tonight as well. They're playing for Shamrock Rovers. And it was actually...
And they weren't, because they were the two Rovers. The Dundalk lads were on the bench.
Yeah, or with Shamrock Rovers now at the minute. But anyway, it was kind of quite funny, because they have rather raided a lot of those Dundalk players with the fixture.
I hope it was better than the way you told it there.
I thought
the tied around is Derry Drogheda by an absolute streak. The
minor Rovers draw the
game. Rovers don't have a European game. They'll comfortably beat you a lot. So, like,
we'll just see about
Lisa
that.
Fallon was there last night in scouting
what
duty.
What more do you want? Lisa Fallon was at the game.
Doing the homework, but I actually think the thing about the cup draw was there's a lot of all non-league ties or all junior football ties, and in fairness, a lot of the first division clubs got screwed by getting Premier Division clubs. You know, Sligo Rovers, Cork sounds great, but you'd expect Sligo Rovers should be able to deal with that comfortably. And the Derry Drogheda is the one. Derry Drogheda is the one tie where a team could go out who you think would actually have a chance of going quite far, because I think the cup, it could be quite open this year.
And draw the United, having announced, which probably deserved a bit more coverage, the two lads signing new contracts, obviously Tim Clancy and Kev Doherty as well, which is massive, massive news to them, because Drogheda have just had a sensational season. And they visit St. Pat's on Friday, and Derry play Shamrock Rovers. So Derry have the angle of, well, I think Rovers will be on a bit of a downer, to be honest, coming to Brandywell. Pat's playing Drogheda. Drogheda will be buoyed by their two great leaders, of course, committing themselves to the club for forevermore, or for the very least, for two more years.
It stops players, it stops people sniffing around their players, at least.
They And Dundalk, Finn Harps on Saturday. You know, Finn Harps, two wins from 14, I think, missed two penalties in their last two home games. Bowes against Longford. Longford, probably not the worst time to play Bowes.
That's Sunday. Bowes, Longford is Sunday, as well as Waterford against Sligo Rovers. Sunday afternoon games, like days of yore. You should only have Gabriel Egan and Owen Ham commentating on them, and you know, whatever.
I'm off to the seaside Friday. Bray Wanderers, Galway United, Athlone Town, Shelburne, Treaty, UCD. Treaty, it just keeps on getting better for Treaty. Brilliant results. In last minute equaliser against Shell's place, even though 100 people there, place was rocking, apparently, Markets Field. And also on Friday, Wexford play Cork City, Cove Ramblers, Cabin Teely. On Saturday, that's our lot, Dan.
That is our lot. We'll be back next week, hopefully reflecting on some European successes. Hopefully. Well, I suppose we're going to have all Thursday games next week, but hopefully there's three of them and not just one.
Indeed. And that was in association with futureticketing.ie.